Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coast to Cast, a podcast on coastal science where we meet scientists and ask questions that don't usually appear in published papers. My name is Giovanni Coco, and today I'm here with Bruno Castel. Bruno is a coastal geomorphology or nearshore morphodynamicist. We'll ask him, and he works at the University of Bordeaux as part of CNRS. We will also ask him about CNRS and about his position. He's a real surf zone scientist. He's done a lot of work. I'm sure you know it already, on the rip currents, on shoreline change, on sandbars, and has used a variety of approaches. Probably we immediately think about numerical work, but actually Bruno has done a lot of work in the lab too and in the field. Hello, Bruno. Welcome to Coast to Cast, and thanks for taking the time to join us and answer some questions.
Hi, Giovanni. It's a pleasure.
What about this past couple of years? How has it been living with COVID, and has it affected your research?
Well, it has been, two strange years. I mean, I think I coped quite well with COVID here. The first wave was difficult because we were all in lockdown and research was basically off. So I could still work on numerical modeling. It was difficult for field work. It was difficult for students too. So we spent quite a lot of time on Zoom making meetings. But situations, improved over the month. Now it's been almost, 1 year that we work in a kind of normal situation. So it's okay.
Okay, let's go to our traditional set of questions, and let's get started with, how did you actually start in coastal science?
I don't really remember when it started. I remember that maybe when I was 15 or 16, at that time, I was now surfing all year round, and at that time it was the early 90s, and there was no internet, there was no wave forecast, and nothing of this, and so I was spending quite a lot of time to try to understand the sea level pressure of maps from the weather station at La Rochelle where I lived, and over the years I tried to understand how this low pressure system moves and evolve, and how all this translated in terms of wave conditions at the coast. Yeah, I developed quite a lot of empirical knowledge on this. And when I was maybe 18 or 20, I was sure that I wanted to be and that I would become someone working on climate or meteorology. When I was at the engineering school, when I was something like 21, I had my first lectures in coastal morphodynamics, in coastal hydrodynamics. And this is when I really realized that this is what I wanted to do. Because there was all these equations that explain what I had been observing over the last 6 or 7 years in the surf. And I knew that finally this is what I wanted to do. And I really started in during my PhD when I was something like 23. So cool. Yes, I wanted to do coastal science when I was 20, 21, but without really knowing it, empirically I started maybe at 15.
And you're now at Bordeaux, at University of Bordeaux, and your position is at CNRS. Can you explain us what CNRS is and your position, in fact?
CNRS stands for Centre National de la Recherche Scientifique. So it's a national institute where you have researchers who are full-time researchers. They do not have to lecture, who can work freely on any topic they want. So I'm pretty lucky to be part of this institute. And so there's a lot of different fields of research in CNRS. It goes all the way from, physics, chemistry, social sciences, law, anything, really anything. And as a CNRS researcher, we are appointed in a university. So I work at the University of Bordeaux. And as I said, I do not have to lecture, but I give quite a lot of lectures anyway. I mean, in Bordeaux, but also in Paris, Toulouse, lecturing for professor at professors in high schools and things like this. So.
Okay, let's change the type of question. How do you balance your personal and work life?
I do my best. It's not perfect, but at least it's much better than during my early career. I mean, my work and personal life was quite a mess at the beginning, but then I became a father. So I had to to buy an agenda, to sell my van, to cut my hair, everything. Yes, basically since that time, I work only during weekdays. I come back quite early from work in the afternoon to take care of my children and drive them to their activities. And I work again in the evening. But on Friday at about 5 or 6 p.m., I just switch off my computer and just switch on again on the next Monday. So I think it's a good balance, but my kids still complain that I work too much. So it could be improved.
What about your interests out of work? You mentioned surfing.
Yes, obviously surfing, although, well, I surf much less than before. I mean, it's a 40-minute drive from my house. So, yes. So now it's maybe once or twice a month, but only in very good conditions. And I'm more now in the kind of old school layback surfing with the longboarding. So it's, I love it. And my other big interest is music. So I've been playing music for the last 30 years, maybe. So I currently play a bass guitar in a band. In my last band, I was playing drums and basically I'm my favorite instrument is guitar. So I love jamming with friends and just playing music when I can. But the same as surfing, I have a much less spare time and maybe other interests. Or I love also walking my dogs in the forest. I'm lucky enough to live against a big forest. And go fishing with one of my kids.
Let's now move back to more sciencey questions. Tell us about your favorite paper or a paper that changed your career, your way of thinking, your research.
That's a difficult question. There's a lot of papers I really liked. But maybe during my early career, when I started my PhD, it was in 2001, there was maybe this paper by Albert Falques and colleagues on the bed surf mechanism that explains the formation of rip channels and crescentic sandbars through positive feedback mechanisms. And although it was with a kind of simple linear stability analysis, it was amazing to me to see how such patterns in the sand can spontaneously emerge. I mean, it explained quite a lot of things. And it was also at about the same time that there was this Ashton and Murray paper on shoreline instability in nature. So as an early career scientist, it was an enlightening kind of paper. And I love both.
Definitely nice papers. I definitely like them. What do you think of our ability to predict long-term coastal change?
I think it's pretty bad, very bad, but it really depends on the site. I mean, for instance, in Southwest France, we work quite a lot on Trouvère Beach. And I think that the PhD work of Mauricio Dana, who just defended, shows that very well. I mean, when you have a site like this, where it's a simple kind of setting, I mean, it's an along shore uniform coast. There's no longshore transport gradients. It's a big beach, a big dune, big bars, no human activities, and everything here is mostly controlled by cross-shore processes. And this work of Mauricio shows that when you are in a simple setting and where you have a lot of available data to constrain your model, then you can do fairly good work in predicting shoreline change and the uncertainties. So in these kind of conditions, I think that we are pretty good. But as soon as you have long shores and transport gradients, human activities, and especially geology, then all of this becomes so complex, and this is where our predictions are very, very bad, I think.
So can you explain for our listeners a topic you're currently working on or a topic of your research?
Currently, I work on three different things. So beach safety with the social scientists and public health scientists. I also work quite a lot on coastal dunes with the coastal dune managers, but maybe yes, as you said at the beginning, maybe my primary topic currently is shoreline modeling. I just had a big grant started in April this year, which is about assimilating satellite-derived shorelines in hybrid shoreline models. So the idea is to better reconstruct and understand the evolution over the last 40 years. Back to the first Landsat satellite images, but also to try to better predict shoreline change. Especially, as I said before, I mean, to try to improve our predictive ability along coastlines where you have longshore processes, headlands, and things like this.
And you worked a lot on rip currents. We've also worked together on rip currents, which was fantastic for me. There's been a lot of work on rip currents. What's left to model with respect to rip currents? Is there still a question that is open, or we know in almost everything we need from a theoretical perspective, at least?
Well, I think that we know a lot of things. Maybe where we are not still very good is just the morphodynamics of rip currents. I think that there are still improvements to be made, and to try to simulate the entire upstate and downstate sequences of the beach state model on the short. The models are not able to do that entirely yet. And maybe on the hydrodynamics, yes, I think that we are very good. I mean, especially for hydrodynamically controlled flash rips, and for bathymetrically controlled fixed rips, but maybe in between there is this continuum which is less understood. I mean, in natural rips, we often see that the rip flow regime can change rapidly within just a few minutes from a kind of recirculation flow to an exit flow through rip pulsing, and all this is controlled by different things. I mean, wave groupiness, shear instabilities, short crested wave vorticity generation, and we do not know really what are the respective contributions of all this. So, and that's a pity. I mean, I had a big grant on that proposal that we submitted with Eric Barthélémy from Grenoble University a few years ago, and we had designed fantastic laboratory experiments in a big wave basin to test all this. And now, well, this proposal was not granted. I mean, that's life.
That's life. We all have to deal with the rejected proposals, unfortunately. Yes. You do field experiments, and tell us about the wildest field conditions you have encountered.
I was quite a lot of time in rips. I mean, even before drifters, I was playing in the rips with the GPS to have some Lagrangian data. But I think never in very wild kind of conditions. I mean, never in waves bigger than 2 meters. And when it was big, it was with lifeguards. So it was, I think, kind of safe. Maybe the wildest thing I've done, it was maybe during the ECORS field experiment in 2008 in Southwest France. I was part of the hydrodynamic team of my lab, and we were supposed to, each low tide to verify the sensors, adjust them in case if there was too much erosion or accretion. And it was in the middle of the winter, we had some big waves, and sometimes you have low tides in the middle of the night. And I remember a couple of times just going in the dark, there was no phone, and just with a little lamp and a colleague trying to run in the lower intertidal zone to try to check a sensor, and then running back to the dune when a big infragravity wave was coming. So it was this was, I think, pretty wild. And yes, my employer must not.
Definitely qualifies as wild. What's your take on machine learning?
I wish I were an expert in machine learning. So that's for sure. I think it's a very, very powerful tool. I mean, I play a little bit with Bayesian network and even deep learning to try to count the people entering on the beach or exiting the water. Does not work yet, but I try to play a little bit with that. I think it's a really fantastic tool. I mean, it's really amazing what you can do with that in terms of shoreline modeling, for instance, in terms of information you can infer from a big data set, from satellite images or video systems. So I think it's a very, very useful, but maybe just complementary with numerical modeling, process-based modeling, and other sources of data. Because there's always this kind of drawback of this kind of black box. I mean, Bayesian network are not real black box, but most of the machine learning systems or techniques are black box. So that's the primary drawback I see. But I see it as a tool like modeling, like field data, like monitoring, like satellite.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, we are in the big data era, and I'm not sure that we'll be able to avoid machine learning in the next years or decades.
And now, probably the most complicated question of the whole podcast: can you predict a major advance to happen in the next 50 years in coastal science, or an area that where we will advance?
No, I can't. I should have listened to more coast to coast to see what the other says, but I do not see any major big advance, any major paradigm shift where we will say, okay, we forgot that process, and actually this is why. This explains almost everything. I do not think that there will be such big change. Instead, I anticipate that there will be some incremental, gradual improvements in our understanding, because models will be improved. We will have satellites providing more data. We'll have monitoring programs providing longer time series. With more seasonal and internal cycles and things like this. So I see the improvements like this, rather incremental. And maybe there are some major improvements I anticipate, or I think, or I hope that it will be by maybe trying to bring together big data scientists or computer scientists with coastal geomorphologists or geologists. I think that these communities should work more together, and I think that we'll make major improvements like this.
Tell us the best or the worst advice you ever received.
Maybe the best advice is do not say yes to everything. I mean, I had this advice quite a lot of times during my early career, and it was a very, very, very good advice, which I did not follow, and I kind of regret it. And this is an advice that I now give to the youngish scientists I work with, who are smarter than me and learn to say no sometimes. Because yes, if you say yes to everything, it all becomes a mess, and you start working on things that are useless or a waste of time. So yes, I'm still learning from this advice.
I think we're all learning about, we're all trying to learn to say no sometimes.
Yeah, I do not remember of any real bad advice. I mean, yes, maybe some advice at the, you know, when you start, you have colleagues saying, oh, you should help me on this proposal and on this and this and this. So you start working quite a lot, but you do not lead any work package, or you do not lead any big project. So it's not very good for your track record. So this is An advice I now give to my young colleagues is that when you are involved in a project by somebody else in the team or elsewhere, try to be clearly identified as a work package leader or something that you can have on your CV.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're approaching the end of the podcast, so we have now some quick questions about, for example, what's your favorite band, music, or composer?
I think my favorite band is the Cat Empire from Australia. I love this one. I love many kind of music. All kind of music which are not electronic. I mean, I love this kind of music. So yeah, the Cat Empire, but there are many other bands, many other music styles that I love. So.
Favorite dish or signature dish?
My favorite dish is chicken tikka masala, for sure.
Latest book you read?
I usually read books in English, but the last one is in French. It's called Après nous le déluge, which is a book. It's a kind of dark novel. It's written by one of my cousins. And so this is why I read it. It was out just a few months ago. And,
what about your favorite movie?
Once again, it's French. Les Tontons Flingueurs. It's a kind of comedy crime movie from the early 60s. I mean, I think I watched it 30 or 40 times. It's really, really great. I'm not sure it has been translated, and I'm not even sure it can be translated because there's a lot of kind of slang and things that can be difficult to translate, but it's very, I love this movie.
I have to look for it. Before we finish, of course, thank you for joining us, but is there anything else you wanted to say? Anything that I haven't asked that you would like to address?
No, I think everything is fine. I just hope that we will now meet soon in conferences and be back in kind of normal academic life in France. Now we are working like everything was normal, but we still miss this international networks and networking and conferences. And so yes, that's
what I hope. Look forward to the moment where we can meet again. Of course, for sure, it'll be great.
Well, thank you. And yes, I just wanted to thank you for inviting me. It was a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Bruno, and thanks to our listeners, and see you for the next podcast.